Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by my special co-host this week, Senator Coleman Young II. Thanks for co-hosting. I appreciate it.
Kyle, always a pleasure, man. I know I finally arrived. I'm co-hosting with you, man. It's a dream come true, baby.
This is awesome. This Cobo Hall renovated is just really pretty awesome.
It is. It's pretty amazing what's happened and how this has all gone down and what this looks like. You know, and you have to give it to the great. It did a really good job with the people who came in here and built this. So it really captures the excitement right now, what's going on in the Democratic Party.
Did you get lost going to your caucus meeting? I got lost.
Oh, yeah. Well, I get lost in this place all the time. You know what I'm saying? I get lost in this place trying to find parking. I get lost in this place trying to go to the bathroom. Because I'm usually over there in the food court anyway. So, I'm not shy because of eating. So, that's usually where I'm at anyway. So, this is a great place.
Oh, it's a heck of a view.
Great venue. Absolutely.
Detroit River right over here. Great big glass windows looking out. It's really pretty awesome. So, this is a little bit different of a scene than we saw 2 years ago when we had the Mark Brewer-Lon Johnson fight.
Yeah, a little bit. Huge difference, man. It's families. It's kind of always hard to see families fighting one another. What's going on? But unfortunately, that's the process that has to be done in order for us to become stronger from it. A diamond is nothing but a lump of coal under intense heat and pressure. And so, we had enough intense heat and pressure that year, so now we can start forging and becoming a diamond and shine bright. So I'm excited.
Why do you think Lon was able to get a second term so easily? From talking to people, it just seems like, it was a rough year for Democrats in general. Republicans really did well. So the interest groups involved said, hey, go ahead and give Lon another shot. There were some good things you can point to.
Right. Well, listen, I think a lot of things we can point to in terms of, absentee balloting, in terms of new technology that he used. There were a lot of positives that we have that we can build on. I just think it was a rough year in general. I think it had a lot to do with, really with the 24-hour news cycle, not dissing you or news people or anything like that. But I think it's more accessible to know what's going on national level. And I think because of national mood, President Obama wasn't really all that popular then. Mm-hmm. His numbers were underwater. And I think that affected the entire Democratic Party and its races across the country. And I also think it was the fact that Democrats really didn't, I think on a national level and on a state level, really didn't embrace him and Democratic principles. We spent more time playing defense than we did playing offense. We had one person in Kentucky who wouldn't even admit she voted for the president. Come on, Kyle, you're not gonna win a race if you can't admit you voted for the leader of the free world and the Democrat at the top of the ticket.
That's not good.
So, yeah, I think that's really what happened. I think people understand that. But I think we have a really great opportunity in 2016. I think there's a lot of optimism there. I think Hillary Clinton's numbers are looking really great. I think, if the Republicans don't go on there and complete, if the Republicans start foaming at the mouth every time someone talks about taxes or choke every time someone talks about working people or income inequality or unions, I think we're going to have a real good year. 2016, because they got a governor now. The crazy train has to stop. You got to put the brakes on the crazy express. You got a governor now.
Well, they don't have a unified candidate either. I mean, that's the other thing, too. There's quite a bit of choices out there for him to choose from. It's hard to see, though, that Jeb Bush doesn't materialize out of this as the favorite. I mean, that's what it's kind of looking like. It looks like things are going in his direction, and maybe the other candidates are, I don't want to say fringe, but they're kind of niche candidates. Maybe that's the way to put it. They appeal to a certain audience within that party, whereas Jeb kind of represents the blue blood of the Republican Party and kind of where they have gone historically when you've started talking about nominees.
Right, absolutely. It's usually like the oldest, most establishment person wins in the Republican Party. That's really the oldest white guy wins in the Republican Party. I think if Jeb Bush wins for the Republican Party, that is fantastic news for the Democrats. Fantastic. I think that Bush name has just been so maligned and people have such just ugly, almost rancorous feelings about George Bush and what he's done. I don't see how that cannot transfer over to Jeb. His unfavorables are really high, and so I don't really see him overcoming that in a presidential election, no matter how much money he has. And I think to see those guys fight it out, and our guys really starting to kind of coalesce to get behind Hillary Clinton. I don't think Elizabeth Warren is running. That's the only person who I would see who would be able to fire up the base and be a threat to Hillary Clinton. I don't see that happening. I don't see anybody else. Look, I love Joe Biden. I think he's a great guy. I think he'd be a great president. But I just don't think this is his time. I think he's going to sit this one out. I think this is Hillary's time.
And does that work to the Democrats' advantage?
Oh, it works.
You think so?
Oh, well, I mean, most people say that you want to see Democrats go through some fire. Listen, I think that Hillary Clinton is a fighter. And I've seen her. I've seen her go out there. I see what she believes in. I may not agree with everything, but I like her style. I like her stances. I like her. But I don't think Hillary Clinton needs to be fired up. I don't think she needs to go into a room of bumper cars. I think she's going to be ready to take it to the Republicans, and they need to look out.
The only controversy I could find in this entire convention was in the 13th Congressional District, which is next year's in the 14th Congressional District. They did elect a chairman who is a supporter of John Conyers, the current congressman, obviously. I was able to speak with the congressman. We'll get to that clip in just a second. But historically, why is it then that the 13th Congressional District has been a little bit more contentious than maybe some of the others?
I think it's just history, man. It's the fighting 13th. You know, that's what they are. That's what they're about. That's what they do. And that's how we do it in Detroit. And so I think that's just their history. And that's just where they come from. That's just how we're bred. But, you know, again, like I said earlier, I think, you know, in order for us to find a pearl, first, the oyster has to be torn. And I think the fact that they tore this oyster and they had this election and they had this person and they went through the democratic process, it was done peacefully and it was done righteously, I think we're going to be stronger. I think the 13th district is going to be better for it.
I wanted to get your thoughts here on the process here. Obviously, we had a lot. We had four slates. What does this say about the 13th Congressional District, and how? What's your takeaway, the fact that we had a contested election here for this Congressional District?
Well, my take is that it's so important that there were multiple groups of people trying to become the leaders of the most active district in Michigan. The 13th district has more people. Here's the winner right here, Jonathan Kinlock. What we need to do is make sure we're motivating everybody that we can to become even larger, and then helping other districts get the same thing going. The energy, the commitment, and most important, the democracy. Unless it's a fair operation, people won't come back. They say it's being run by two or three people, and the fix is in, and all we are the ones that say yes and okay. And so it's that spirit of democracy itself within the district that gives everybody a chance that makes it so successful.
Real quickly, you're the Dean of Congress now. How do you take this role?
Oh, I'm so honored. The dean before me was John Dingell.
Right.
And John Dingell and I worked together, and when he was leaving, he talked to me and turned it over to me and pledged to help me in every way that he can before he left. Now, of course, his wife is a congresswoman, and we're working together well as well.
One last thing I wanted to ask you about. I'm going to air this on our podcast on President's Day. I wanted to know who your favorite president of all time was.
My favorite president of all time.
I wonder if you're going to say Barack Obama because you want something out of him.
No, I think Barack is certainly up there, but I didn't have a choice. Each president had his own set of challenges, and the country was going through their own thing, starting with Roosevelt, who took on Henry Wallace, although they dumped him in the end and brought in Harry Truman. But that is the studying the presidents is a good history for me, because I like the fact that we were able after Kennedy to come on with a successor that made it work for us. So to me, that's something that ought to be in the history books. We ought to explain what each president, including Nixon, who was there, was one of the ones, and what they did. I remember, I'll never forget, when Richard Nixon cut off all the welfare programs. It was shocking. And he started off, he said there are too many people living off the government dole. And that's what he started off doing. And I never forgot that at all.
Amazing. Congressman, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. So I was able to run into Gary Peters, our new U.S. Senator, just a few minutes ago. Before we go to that clip, though, how do you think it was that Gary Peters was able to succeed on a ballot where Democrats in general didn't do well?
Well, I think one is because Gary Peters ran such an efficient and effective campaign. And, you know, because Gary Peters is like Raymond, man. Everybody loves Gary Peters. Come on. But I also think it was the fact that Terry Lynn Land was just horrible. As great as Gary Peters was as horrible as Terry Lynn Land was. She was just terrible. Wasn't ready for prime time. She wanted to campaign without talking to people. How is that possible? It's like going swimming without trying to get wet. I mean, it just was ridiculous. It was a preposterously ran campaign, and the best thing about her campaign was the end, because it was over.
I thought the best part of the Gary Peters campaign was the sweatshirt ad.
Yes.
And I did talk to him, and we'll find out what he's doing with that sweatshirt in just a second. Tell me the feel that you're getting right now here as you're going around the different caucus rooms. What kind of sense are you getting from the Democrats you're talking to?
Broadly? I mean, certainly.
Yeah, just in general. I mean, we just come off an election season. The Republicans seem to have won pretty much up and down across the country. Are you feeling folks are down, or are they already looking ahead to 16?
Yeah, I think definitely people are looking forward ahead as to what we have to do. And certainly I've been getting great positive response as a result of our victory here last year in the U.S. Senate race. And certainly we won the educational boards as well, so we had some victories last year. But we know we have to build for a presidential year. This is going to, Michigan will be one of the key races in the presidential contest, and turning out voters and having a strong Democratic message is going to be important for success in 2016. And, you know, everybody knows that there's work to be done, and they're willing to do it because the stakes are high.
Have you done anything as far as endorsing anyone for president?
I've not had any official endorsements yet. We have to wait to see who's running. We don't have any candidates right now.
Not yet, but is there anyone in particular that you hope does run?
Well, certainly I've been very supportive of Hillary Clinton, and I think she would be an outstanding candidate for president.
How do you think that she would do as a top of the ticket as far as galvanizing people and getting them out to vote for Democrats after we had 8 years already of a Democratic presidency?
Well, I think the contrast between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party on issues that matter to middle-class families and those who aspire to middle-class families are very distinct. And the candidate for president for both parties will have very distinct messages, and there will be clear choice available for the people of the United States. And I would expect that will bode very well for the Democrats in the election.
Describe your first month and a half in office as a U.S. Senator.
Well, it's been good. I've getting to know my colleagues. The one thing that I enjoy about the Senate is that it's a smaller body, so I've had an opportunity to get to know my colleagues better, and as well as in a more informal way. I've been able to get to know the freshman class in particular, although I'm the only Democrat. There are 12 Republican new senators. A couple of them I worked with, actually three of them I worked with in the House before they became senators. So I already had relations. But through our orientations, I've gotten to know them, the whole class, in a more personal way. We've had some social time together. And as a result of that, I'm hoping that that will facilitate our ability to work together and find common ground on the tough problems we face as a country.
All right. What did you do with the sweatshirt that you used for the TV ad? Do you still have it?
I still wear it.
Oh, you do? You didn't frame it?
No.
Okay.
No. In fact, my wife suggested we get some signatures from some supporters on it, and I said, I'm not doing that because I'm going to still wear that shirt. I love that sweatshirt, so I still wear it. I've worn it a few times since the campaign.
One last thing. We're going to air this on the podcast on President's Day. Your favorite president of all time?
Actually, my favorite president was Teddy Roosevelt, which, of course, he was a Republican, and so that might be a surprise to folks. But Teddy Roosevelt, of course, was an incredible progressive who really opened the eyes of the country to the plight of a lot of folks who were struggling, and as well as being a great conservationist in the country, who started the movement for national parks and to protect the natural wonders we have. And he was a man of action. I like that Teddy never backed down from a fight, and obviously.
Right.
and was very principled, and so certainly he's one that I've always admired a great deal.
And he finished his speech with a bullet in his chest, too, which you got to like, too.
That's true, he did. He was shot and didn't tell anybody, but he wasn't going to stop the speech. That is...
I got to like that.
That is incredible determination, and certainly represents the best of public service.
Very good. Gary Peters, U.S. Senator, thank you very much.
Yep.
Senator, so I was able to talk with Mark Totten, who ran for Attorney General, was not successful. But going into 2016, obviously we don't have a lot of statewide-type races for Democrats. So what is kind of the focus in kind of these out years where there isn't somebody necessarily elected statewide that you can coalesce? Does it become more regional, or does it become broader because you got presidential on the top?
Oh, I definitely think it becomes broader. I definitely think we need to focus on the message. I think we need to start lower and build out. I think the best campaigns start from the bottom up. You know what I'm saying? I think that's really what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to focus on our message. We're going to have to embrace our party again. We have to embrace who we are and what we stand for and what we're about. I think that's something that we kind of ran away from last session. We're going to have, and quite frankly, we're going to have to get some backbone. We're going to take a position and stand on our positions and not be afraid, have the courage of our convictions and the passion of our principles and the integrity of our ideals and ideas. And I think once we get that and once we know who we are and whose we are and what we're about, then I think we can spread a message. I think we're going to win. And then I think we also need to do a better job of going out there and talking to people. We were very high tech. We weren't really high touch. And so I think that if we get the match the high touch with the high tech, I think we're going to have a great year in 2016.
All right. Very good. Let's listen to Mark Totten. Mark Totten, Attorney General candidate from 2014. How are you doing?
I'm good. Very good. Good to be here.
So you're roaming around. You got the MDP pin on here. So what's next here for Mark Totten?
You know, I've gone back to work. I teach at Michigan State University, teach law students, and really enjoying that, looking at a number of opportunities to get plugged in as well and trying to kind of sort out where I want to, focus some of my advocacy work. And so we'll see. Most importantly, I've tried to spend as much time with my kids as possible, showing up at, parent-teacher conferences and giving them the time they deserve. It's great to be here. I'm trying to use the day to go around and just say thanks to so many groups here. You know, we started 2 years in advance, and I traveled all around the state. And so one of the great things I think I take away with this is a lot of deep relationships with people all around the state. And it wasn't just in certain pockets, like spent lots of times in the UP and all over. And so these opportunities are really good to reconnect with friends that I haven't seen in a while.
What was the takeaway from the election?
It was obviously a very challenging year. Just look at what happened nationally. It was challenging for Democrats, and any candidate only has the ability to move a race within a certain margin. You know, if you're running for governor, you've got a little more wiggle room. If you're running for AG, you depend a lot on, what's happening nationally, what's happening in the governor's race. And, there's also, unprecedented money on the other side, half of which was dark money, which, it's a system we have to change. We just can't have our attorney general taking millions of dollars from people that we don't know it's coming from. And so I think there were a lot of factors, and I'm part of the effort here with the party to look at what happened and along with the chair, and just try to figure out what are the next steps moving forward. We're still kind of in the process, of gathering data, but within a month or two we'll have a better sense of what some of our substantive conclusions are.
Well, what did you learn in this race that you would take away if you were to go through this again?
Well, I think if you're going to run for statewide office, I think you've got to build a strong grassroots operation, and that means starting early. And so that's something I think we did, and I'm particularly proud of that. I think we built a strong infrastructure for sure. Making sure you've got strong support from, people up and down the party, and, I think we were able to pull together a strong coalition of people. So lots of lessons learned, but I'll say I don't walk away with a long list of regrets. Like, I feel pretty good about what we did.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being absolutely certain, what's the chances that you're going to run again?
I don't know. I'm reluctant to give you a number. I'll just say this. Look, I got into this because I am passionate about what an attorney general can do for Michigan families. And I feel as passionate, if not more passionate, than when I got started. And so, who knows, my focus is hanging out with my family and doing life a little bit here. But, I'm certainly open to whatever opportunities might come up down the road.
I was going to use this for our podcast on Monday, which is President's Day. Who's your favorite president?
lots of people. I'd say, I certainly look up very highly to President Roosevelt. I think a tremendously tumultuous time in American history, but there's a long list.
All right, very good. Mark Totten, appreciate the time. All right, and then our last interview for the day, John Austin, the State Board of Education chairman. The State Board of Education here, they're kind of swimming against the tide here with Snyder as the governor. So how...
Drowning in the river of opportunity? Yeah.
Someone who is on Senate Education, what do you think the Republicans have been doing to education that you think the Democrats could use to their advantage going into 16?
Well, I think what the Republicans have done is, one, I think it's the fact that, we have for-profit schools instead of for-people schools. I think the fact that we have the most for-profit charter schools in the nation, I think, is troubling. Also, I think the fact that what's going on with DPS, particularly with the EAA and trying to expand that, I think that's very unpopular. Even Republicans are already running away from that. So I think that's something we definitely could use to our advantage. But I also think getting back to the building blocks, just properly investing in education again, not demonizing teachers. There's one bill that was introduced that basically privatized the entire teacher profession out. Thought it was crazy. This is just extreme stuff. You know what I'm saying? Serenity Now type stuff. You know what I'm saying? So I think that if we could just go back just to the basics of talking to teachers, not demonizing their profession, I think of making sure that we invest in public education, making sure that we have proper reforms in public education, that we promote education reform is the education deform. I think that's the way we'll get back into the good graces of our people in Michigan in terms of education concern.
Well, let's hear what John Austin had to say on this subject. All right, John Austin, chairman of the State Board of Education. John, you've been on the board since 2000. I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah, maybe it's time for a change. No. I have, and I can't believe it either. We have these long 8-year terms, which are designed to buffer us from day-to-day politics, which have been very helpful, because then we can always do the right thing for education. And if we alienate the MEA and teachers unions one day and the Chamber of Commerce the next, they both forget about it, which I have done, or actually I've been supported by both, which I'm very proud of.
So been there 14 years. Have you seen the Board of Ed be any more political these days than it was when you first started, or has the board kind of stayed out of it?
Well, when I first started, it was split 4-4, and frankly, there was a bit of a war between Republicans and Democrats. It became 5-3 when I was elected, and I began what has been successful, began both building bridges and have good communication with the Republicans on the board and the Republicans elsewhere in state government. So, for example, Mark Murray was then Governor Engler's really advisor on education, the state treasurer. I went to Mark and said, what can we do to work together? And pretty soon we were working together, and we've been working very well together on a bipartisan basis on most everything that we do since then, and that's been a big part of my interest and effort, because when we talk about high learning standards, when we talk about improvements in teacher quality and teacher tenure reform, as long as we get evaluation, these are all should be bipartisan, thoughtful things that we do to advance together. And the thing that's changed most fundamentally in the last 3 years, not as so much on the board, though we've become 6-2 Democratic, but elsewhere in state government, is a much more conservative and, I would say, ideologically driven legislature in particular. So in the last 3 years, we've seen much more aggressive. I mean, the Common Core we embraced as a tune-up, really, of our high standards in 2010. It was not an issue. And then you saw that emerge when factions of the Republican Party make it, in particular, some sort of big issue and start spreading lots of misinformation about it's a federal takeover of education, et cetera. And so you've seen a more robust offensive from the right around open up markets, let new vendors in, open up unlimited cyber schools, lift the cap with no quality control, which has really done damage now to public education, because we have a proliferation of new schools, good, bad, and indifferent in terms of charter, cyber expansion, which the results are coming in, they have come in. It's not a really effective way to educate kids, but there's been a sort of market and ideological push to privatize more vendors in the system, irrespective of its impact on overall public education. And that's been a pretty aggressive front. I mean, the
is
money...
Snyder?
No, I think the governor is not. I know if we were together in a room, we'd probably agree on 7/8 of what education should be about. But he became captain of a team in 2010 that is much more conservative and ideologically driven than he. I mean, witness right to work, which he would never have done if basically he was not given an ultimatum. You want to get to the head of this parade or you want to, you know, look silly. Same thing with when the cap was lifted. I mean, we had a smart charter cap under Granholm where we'll allow the universities to charter more if they're run by quality performers. Mm-hmm. That, in lifting the cap, purposefully, all the quality charter school advocates, including myself, say we've got to have some quality standards for new schools, which are to be opened. That includes don't let people who don't educate kids today open up any more schools. Those discussions and those ideas were purposefully rejected by the moneyed interests leaning on Republican legislators, and there were no quality control in the cap lifting. And the governor did not veto that bill. He signed it. So that's to his discredit.
So the impact on education then has been?
It's been significant now. Look at our results, our test scores. Look at the, Citizens Research Council, if you saw our report that we just did on school finance, they themselves say very clearly the effect of a overall environment of declining enrollments, new market entrants, good, bad, and indifferent, has meant overall diminished resources and enrollments at 2/3 of all schools, which has led to bigger class sizes and has affected the classroom. And that's not helping, and it is hurting our students' learning performance.
What's the future for John Austin?
Well, I am both going to keep advancing this most important agenda, what's the education and higher education improvement efforts we need to make, and I'm eager to help us Democrats, as witness what I put out yesterday, an op-ed saying, we need to win by providing an affirmative agenda, which starts with education, higher education improvement, and making it affordable, which adds having a leadership in the industries of tomorrow, not just today, which includes building up our communities that are crumbling, not tearing them down, and which means sending messages through our public policy that we welcome all to Michigan and not chase people away, whether you're gay, whether you're a woman who needs to be in charge of your own decisions, whether you're a person of color who needs support in voting, more voting rights, not less. All of these are winning messages that win the center, who wants us to be competitive as a state, and that Gary Peters showed you can win. Governor Schneider won 2-1 the independents. We need to win over the majority, even though we're still voting as a majority Democratic witness. Even last November, it was 51% Democrats, 48% Republicans in the overall total vote, and we won all the university and state board slots. So I'm going to continue to be an agent and ambassador for the agenda that I think can really lift Michigan's economy with education at the center of it.
All right, John Austin, State Board of Education. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Senator Coleman Young, this has been a real pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us this week on the program.
Kyle, always a pleasure. I know I finally arrived now. I've done a show with Kyle and survived.
All right. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.